still an alcoholic. Hi. I'm excited about this. I find talking about 6 and 7, you know, sometimes there's lots to talk about, but sometimes, when we're all done, you got to pick it up yourself and say, what's in my life? What's going on? What's getting in my way? Where am I out of line? And what am I going to do about it? Step 8, I know lots about. Step 8 absolutely transformed my life. I could talk about it for a long, long time. And in a way that you'll carry something away if you want, if you relate to what I'm saying. You may not. But I wonder if you realize how much Bill has to say in the book about relationships, about our twisted relations. He also says we need to examine in step 8. You know, didn't take step 8 very seriously. Just a list. And you know, somebody told me, well, you take your step 4 list and then you apply it to step 8. I don't agree. I think there is rich material to be mined. Step 8 was the step where my energy changed drastically, where I felt I really got a grip on life. The first 20, 21 years, I didn't feel really I had a grip on life. I tried to kid myself that the men and the money and the houses and the this and the that, and I'm a big-time operator, and look at me. But inside, there was a part of me was dying. I didn't feel I fit. And when you're behind the walls, you can't feel that you fit. You know, relationships aren't as difficult as you may think. Because once you start to be real, once you tell the truth, and once you know, you're not my problem. I don't care if I sleep with you or not, if you're my husband or not. You're not my problem. If I'm not feeling okay, something else is at work, you see? And once I got to understand that, and I learned what to do about it, everything changed. Everything changed. Bill says also in step 8, he says, even if we find that as we go over the list and we find there aren't too many people to whom we have to make restitution, he said, let us use this time to examine our personal relations and find out all the information we can about ourselves and our fundamental difficulties. That's not saying now we're going to have a false self-fest, an ego-fest, and we're going to think about me. No, I'm going to find out how I function, and I'm going to find out what in the name of God is wrong with me that I don't feel okay. See? He says we can go beyond those things that were superficially wrong with us to see the flaws that are basic and sometimes responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. Those aren't my words. Those are right out of the 12 and 12, step 8. What is he talking about? First of all, I want to just talk a little bit about what I have people do when they do step 8, because that's really where the list is made. And I know that not everybody needs this to the same degree. I know that there are people who absolutely need this. You know, I remember a young man who came to me, and he had 2 PhDs, and he was making $300,000 a year. And he was going to work every day sweating because he knew that today he was going to be fired. I'm telling you about real people who've given me permission to talk, to share these things. I had worked with them. After I had done the work I'm going to talk about, I had worked with a man from my group, and he had benefited greatly. And so he sent this young guy to me. And I have to tell you that within 2 weeks, he was feeling better because of the work that we did, the understanding of what he saw. I think I'll talk about this first. Bill says in step eight, he says, no, I'll tell you what happened to me first. When I was 21 years sober, after I had left the man and I had left my job, I became acutely aware that though I had made all the money I really wanted, needed, I had been successful. I was doing some speaking. I had really developed the kind of life that I thought I wanted. And I was massively unhappy. I never felt I fit. I could walk into a meeting and people make a big fuss over me and I just didn't feel I fit. And then you begin to wonder, I'm 21 years sober. And I was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a group. I had a home group. I went to that home group. I had always participated. I always had a sponsor. I always sponsored. And, you know, I did the best I could with where I was. And one day, one of the older members, and I was running around going to the older members saying, what's wrong? How can I get to feel better? And they would say, go to more meetings. Well, I have to tell you that more meetings in this case were not the clue. I had to do the meetings, of course I did. But he yelled at me. And he quoted this about there, we've had very deep, sometimes quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts that persist below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. He told me that. And I said, that's not AA. That's way too psychological. And he said, get your 12 and 12. And in about that tone. And we opened it to step eight, and there it was. There it was. What's he talking about? Just what he said here. That we've had experiences, sometimes quite forgotten, buried below the level of a consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. This is not fantasy. You know, I have dealt with all kinds of people. I could tell you stories for the rest of the night about people whose experiences have come right out of this. And you see what happened to the life of me was, as a little girl, Dora used to crawl into bed with me and she'd cry. And, you know, I talked about this, but it's just as relevant today. And if you had taken a 2x4 and smacked me over the back, you wouldn't have hurt me as much as her crying did. I wanted it to stop. And I've got 8 brothers and sisters. They love me. They pet me. You know, I'm their little kid sister. And I told them what they should do. I thought, I can't live another night, Dora crawling into bed with me crying. It's got to stop. And so I went to my brothers and sisters. See, and as you begin to see, you know, some of the clouds come off your life. I realize today, my brothers and sisters loved Dora. But in those days, you didn't have Oprah and God knows who on television inviting people to share their innermost secrets on public television. We didn't talk about it at home. I don't ever remember that Dora's problem was talked about by the family. So I was left as a little child to make my own conclusions. And when I ask you to help Dora so that she doesn't cry anymore, and Dora continues to cry, I make my conclusions. And my conclusions were this: nobody cares. I'm not important. If I were important, you'd listen to me and I'd get results. There's nothing I can do. I've done everything I know how, and Dora continues to cry. I'm really passionate about this because this really happened to me and I didn't know how to fix it. And I'm trapped. What am I going to do? Dora's crying. I can't walk away. If I walk away, she has nobody. See, that was my perception. That was not the truth, but that was my perception. And this will never change, you see. And that's what I grew up with, those old voices. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, the way this thing works, you see, you can just leave that. I just need the bottom and then I'm going to pull it back. See, it's like I like to use the analogy of a pond. And let's talk about the unconscious. Carl Jung had a lot to say about the unconscious. That stuff gets buried in the unconscious. And that's the stuff that, you know, in the circle that I drew, that's the stuff that gets repressed. Nobody wants to hear that. And so those old belief systems go in there. And, you know, maybe you have been disciplined sufficiently that you don't say anything. I didn't say anything to anybody. My attitude was, what's the use? They don't listen to me. Nobody listens to me. I've got a problem. You know, when I think about it, is it any wonder that I grew up with fear? You know, and when I was ready to go to university, instead of going to university, I went to the convent. I'm scared because I know that if you get a problem, there's nobody helps you. You see, that's my belief system. I like to compare it to this. Oh, yeah. I like to compare it to that. If you have a pond with water, and in the bottom of that pond is mud. The mud settles, and the surface is smooth. And you can see the sunshine and the moonshine on the surface, and you think everything is okay. And then somebody comes along and throws a rock in the pond and disturbs the mud, and the mud comes to the surface, and now the surface is disturbed. Now you no more see the sunshine and the moonshine. And that's kind of like my life was. There would be times where I seemed to be, okay. And life seemed, you know, not bad. And then something would happen which would trigger one of those old beliefs. And when those old beliefs get triggered, we know now that what happens is not just the old belief gets triggered, but also the feelings that you had as a child. And my feelings were always of helplessness. I can't fix this, and nobody is helping me to fix this. And so now comes the behavior. Isn't that common sense? Now, not everybody has the same amount of stuff buried. The stuff that I had was vicious. It's like the young man who was coming. You see, and when we did the work, I discovered that as a child, he was told by his dad, you are garbage, and no matter what happens to you, you will be found out. I absolutely believe that this is much more prevalent, this kind of problem, than we realize. See, what we know now is, and I don't think this is contrary to spirituality. You know, I remember once Marianne Williams saying, good spirituality is good psychology, and good psychology is always good spirituality. This saved my life, honest to God, because I think I would have left the planet otherwise, because I couldn't find a way around it. What we know now is, if you ever want to pursue this, you know, I don't think there's that much, you know, value. But if you want to pursue it, his name is Dr. Bruce Lipton, and he's a cell biologist. And he has become quite well known in this field of cell biology and has had some great things to say. But what happened to him through studying the cells, he got into this whole business of human development. And what he said, you know, he's written a couple of chapters on this, that before we're born, while we are in our mother's womb, we are very much affected by what goes on within our mother's emotional world. And we develop accordingly. And then at birth, from birth to six, we are what is known as in a hypnagogic state. And he says we download stuff from the stuff that we have seen and experienced and felt and heard and the whole business. And maybe we don't even know what we downloaded. From 0 to 2, he says, our brain waves are in the delta range. We have no control over what goes on. And we simply accept and suck in what's around us. We're just like sponges. And then from 3 to 6, the brain waves speed up a bit, but we still have not achieved that place of being able to determine for ourselves. We still are the sponges that take things in. So, what is the importance of that? Well, if I never understood this, well, there's one more story I want to tell you. A woman came to me, and again, I have permission to tell this. And I had been working with her for a while, and she came with nothing. She was off the street pretty well. And she's an attorney. And she had no licenses, and she had nothing going for her. So I avoided her because I knew she'd be heavy-duty sponsorship work. And anyway, she caught up with me, and finally I said I would sponsor her, and we did the work. And she got off the halfway house where she was living, and she got her licenses, and she went to work, and she's a very successful attorney. This has all happened in 5 years. But there is a fly in the ointment. And the fly in the ointment is that she's always tired, always wants to go to bed. And she told me one time, and so as working with her, I said, go to the doctor, see if there's anything physically wrong. She went to the doctor, and there was nothing physically wrong. She runs. She exercises at a club. She has a very active life, and yet this thing persists. So one day I said to her, we had talked about this before, but one day I said to her, tell me about your childhood. Because I was ready to cut her loose. I didn't have any more ideas up my sleeve. I had done everything with her that I could. I said, tell me about your childhood. And as it turned out, her father was an alcoholic. And I said, but that didn't happen overnight, did it? No, no. I said, well, what about your mother? And to make a long story short, mother's response to the situation in the home and in the town was to go to bed. Mother went to bed. mother lived her life in bed. And so this kid, when she'd come home from school, where would she go? She'd go to bed, and she'd have supper with mother on the bed, and they'd play games, and homework was done on the bed, and comfort was experienced on the bed. And she began to see that what she had downloaded was exactly that. Comfort that you experience, you're going to find it in the bedroom. I'm not making this up. This is really going on. And she began to see. She said, you know, sometimes I'm in the courtroom, and she loves the law. And she said, sometimes I'm in the courtroom and I'm arguing a case, and part of me in the back of my mind is saying, I'm soon going to be finished, and when I'm finished, I'm going to go home and go to bed, because that's where she associates. One day, one weekend, her husband, I just want to try and get to you the importance of this. If you've got, maybe this doesn't mean diddly to you, and that's fine. If it means diddly to you, you might find an answer for something. And one weekend, she went to bed Friday night, stayed in bed all day Saturday, stayed in bed all Sunday morning, and then got up to put the roast in the oven because somebody was coming over for dinner, and went back to bed, at which point the live-in boyfriend nearly blew her head off and said, what the hell is going on here? You say you're not sick, and yet you're tired all the time. See, you and I can't get away from some of this stuff that we have downloaded. And I've had person after person after person come. You see, Bill understood this. I've read some stuff, and why did he put it in here? He put it in here because I have a friend among the Jesuits, and I read a few things that I hadn't seen before, where Bill said he felt pushed aside by his mother. And in the process of that, even though that wasn't the case, it's not about what is the reality. Sometimes it's the perception of reality that dogs us. And he said, I decided that I better be number one, because only when you're number one are you okay. I mean, why would he put this in step eight? You know, the language that he uses, I'm grateful that he put it in step eight, because, you know, where he says, even though you may not have that much to do in terms of restitution, get to know yourself, because this is about more than the superficial stuff. And if you have stuff going in your life that you can't account for, maybe you want to take care and take a look at some of the old belief systems that get triggered. And you know, the way they get triggered, it's kind of like this. Joe and Sally go to a party, and they're feeling very romantic, and they're going to have a great evening. And in walks Susie. And Susie is a former boyfriend of Joe's. And that's the rock that gets thrown in whose pond, whoever. And you see what happens. Up comes the old belief. Nobody loves me, you know, nothing ever goes right. Whatever the old belief is. I don't know what your old beliefs are. I sure as hell know what mine are. And I know the ones that I've lived with, and I know the rocks that have gone in my pond. And I understand now why I'm not important. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm not important. I remember one time at the university, I was getting I was on the dean's honors list. And of 564 people, I was the only one on the dean's honors list. And I remember standing there getting my gown, waiting to go up for convocation. And there were a group of students standing a little ways away, talking about Mildred Frank. and what a smart woman she must be, and I wonder who she is, and I wonder what she's up to, etc. And I remember standing there absolutely stone cold. It did not matter to me that I was on the Dean's Honors List, and I never understood that. After I did this work, I did understand it, because what that did for me was it simply triggered that old message, I'm not important. And you see, the other thing, my big deal is I'm always left out. When I was a little girl, Dora and I, you know, my big brothers and sisters, they were all of an age where they were going to parties and dances and they did things together. I didn't fit. I couldn't get into that. I was 5 and 6, and, you know, they were going to parties and dances. They didn't want me around. And Dora couldn't get into that conversation, so you know what happened. We'd go off by ourselves. I really wanted to be where the party was, and I couldn't be there. And from that, I got the idea, where the people are having fun, I don't fit. You see? And so that night when I stood there putting on my gown, and those 5 or 6 students stood there together chatting, and obviously they were friends. That's what threw the rock in the pond. I wanted to be there. I didn't give a damn about the university and being on the Dean's Honors List. And I could go on and tell you stories like that. Do you identify with this at all? You have an idea of those old ideas that run around in your head? I'm going to give you a method, but before I do that, see, make no mistake. Sometimes people think, well, we're going to talk about the inner child. Spank that one and send it home. This is not about the inner child. This is about a scientific reality. You know, it's part of learning who we are. I really started to grow after I understood this, and until I understood this, I just felt wrong. I just felt I didn't fit, and I was unable to have a decent relationship. There are lots of people who teach this in one way or the other. And one of the, I like this one because, again, it brings forward how this thing happens. So you have a current reality, whatever that is. That reality, you're not going to necessarily see it in its truth. You're going to see it through that birth script, he calls it. What he means is the old belief system, whatever your old beliefs are. That is going to be the equivalent of the rock in the pond, and that is going to trigger your old beliefs. And with those old beliefs are going to come the emotional drivers for approval and control. Like Susie, when the boyfriend's former girlfriend comes in, she wants to control that situation. She doesn't know what to do with it. And so those emotional drivers for approval and control prompt action. And often what they prompt is fighting. Often what they prompt is arguments that need never take place, that take place only because that old stuff has been triggered. And I can tell you, it's the most painful experience that I know. And it seems so real. It impacts our relationships. It impacts how we relate, how we feel, and how we change, and it generates results, and it's not the truth. And I found a teacher, and this teacher took me through a process, and basically what it was this. I'll write it on the board after a while, so anybody who wants it can get it. And the process goes like this. If that's the voice that you're hearing, nobody cares about me, you ask yourself, is that the voice of God, or is that the voice of that false self? Is that the voice of that old belief system? You see, I think if you think about it, you know, remember that diagram I wrote this morning, and where he says the main problem rests in the mind, in this old stuff. It's very difficult to continue moving forward if you're going to be listening to this old stuff with all the feelings that get generated. So number one, you ask yourself, who's talking? Is this the voice of God, or is this the voice that's buried in the unconscious? Number two, if you realize it is the voice that is talking from the unconscious, then I have to acknowledge it is not the truth. It is not the truth. It is the lie. It is the false self talking to me. Number three, then what is the truth? Well, I can put out the truth in a number of ways. God is within me. God cares about me. And I can use common sense, because this woman came in, and because she had a relationship with the boyfriend doesn't mean that now they have, you know, we can talk some common sense into ourselves. And then lastly, and this comes from the Course in Miracles. The Course in Miracles has a lot to say about this kind of stuff. And one of the things it talks about is that power within us. And I don't particularly like this word. In the Aramaic called it Ruka Dekucha, which meant the breath of life. It's also called the Holy Spirit. I think it could also be called the power of God within us. And when that happens to me now, I ask that power. I get very still. And I ask that power to remove that piece, that old belief system. And I don't think it's all going to be removed. I think what will be removed is the piece that got disturbed. And if it's removed, I never have to see it again. And then I like to end with an action. An action that I think is one of the kindest things that I can do. And it has to do with our big book. It has to do with the fourth dimension thinking. I like to send a blessing to whoever it was that threw the rock in my pond. And I like to do it this way. Here's Mildred, and here's Susie, or whoever. And if this is the case, if you believe this, I do believe this, the kindest thing that I can do, you threw a rock in my pond. Normally, I hate your guts, and I want to hurt you. And I want to live in, and you know, in that depression and that anger and maybe gossip and all kinds of things. Instead, I recognize how this process works, and you did me a favor because you brought up something that's buried within me. See, I go back to the Erin Brockovich movie. When she went and got these people together, people were dying in that community. The children were getting sick. And when she got somebody to come there and dig up and find out what was really wrong, they found there was toxic waste buried. They weren't angry that that happened. They were very happy that they found out what was wrong and something could be done about it. If I've got old belief energy resting in me and you trigger it, I should be very grateful, because now I can do something about it. I can acknowledge that it's there. I can acknowledge it is not the voice of God talking to me. It is the voice of the false self. I can recognize it for what it is, and I can ask that power of God within me to remove that, and I never have to see it again. And then for you who threw the rock in my pond, I can spend 30 seconds or a minute remembering that God is within you and God is within me, and we are one. See? And then a whole different dynamic takes place. I went away and I did this work. This is now 15 or 16 years ago. And I think the change in me was as dramatic almost as the change from drinking to not drinking. Because sometimes people just didn't know what to make of me. They didn't know. They thought they were, you know, if you caught me at a time when somebody had thrown a rock in my pond, so to speak, I might misbehave. I might treat you coldly. I was so wrapped up in myself that often you would read that energy and you wouldn't know what was wrong with me. That stopped right there. I learned what to do with it. And I remember coming back, and I remember five or six times people taking me aside and saying, "What are you doing? You are so different. You are like a different person." And I really was. And I still am. And I still do this process. Because this has been a real biggie. This has been like uncovering a whole new set of truths. And I just keep seeing more and more. And I thank Bill Wilson for putting that in the 12 and 12. Maybe you don't need it. I did. Any questions about that? No, it's there. See, I think that's why Bill says that stuff is buried below the level of consciousness. Like, it's not a place, but it's an awareness. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, where do beliefs reside in us? But it gets triggered when something reminds you. It might be a man's voice. You know, I've often had this happen where women come and they get triggered because they meet somebody like a boss, and the boss's voice reminds them of their father, and their father was mean, or their father abused them, and so on. And it interferes with their work, you see? So it's there. Yes, Bob?
You listed more of a self-effacing nature. I'm not important, etc. But in this false self, isn't there also the opposite side of the same coin? Is I'm so important, I'm above the rules.
Absolutely.
I'm so important, I don't have to make that amend.
Absolutely.
I'm so important that I don't have to. What I would expect someone else to do to me, I don't have to do them because I'm so up here.
See, one is as good. One is as false as the other. Thanks for bringing that up. I don't think I had a whole lot of that. Mine were the depressive kind. And the one that really always, often comes up is, I'm not good enough. And what they're doing is comparing the outside.
And our outsides are never going to be equidistant. Yeah.
The same thing. I don't have to make this amends because I'm so focused. I'm less than and more than at the same time. I'm so focused on my own financial insecurity that I can't see past that to pay them back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, once you start thinking about this, you start realizing what it is that you're hearing,
what is really being generated. Yes, Aaron.
There's a lot of talk I hear all the time about, you know, like, which voice is ego, which voice is self-loathing, which voice is shame, which voice is self-empowerment, which voice is will of God. And I know a couple of crazy voices.
Ask yourself one question, the two questions. Is this the voice of God talking to me? Or is this the voice of all the craziness, the false self? That's all you have to do. Really, that's all you have to do. But, you know, if you ever want to do some work, I think it clarifies itself, so it happens so quickly that it's absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Do family members trigger these things, these reactions,
you know,
more than, say, Joe Small family members?
You know who triggers it most?
Well, I don't know. You know, it could be a stranger, but it's most often a lover. It's often a spouse. It's often a child. It's often a parent. Most often. It could be a boss, and sometimes it gets triggered by somebody at work, somebody who gets a promotion, and so on.
Is it something you need to identify when it happens and try to figure out what the best step to do? Is, like you say, the identification of the faults?
I'll tell you.
Keep it simple. This is not about descending into self again.
Right.
This is about getting beyond self.
Right.
If you ask yourself these questions, if you hear that voice and you feel disturbed, is this the voice of God? You can figure that one out real. Is this the voice of the false self? If it is the voice of the false self, do I believe this? Well, it feels like it, but that's not the truth. What is the truth? And then you can, I don't think I have it here, but I've done a whole raft of corrections of this, processes that you can go through. What would the voice of God be saying to me about this? And then asking the Spirit, the power of God within you, to remove that belief system. Because it's like step six. I can't change myself. You can't change yourself, but you do have to change your belief system. You have to change the way you think, one thought at a time, one voice at a time, and one action at a time. As the old-timer said to me, you have to do that your part so that you can be changed. You see? And it works, yes.
Just another question on... or comment. When Mildred and Susie, and you think, eventually if you come around to thanking Susie for bringing that up and that you could look at it and discard it, is that turning the other cheek spiritually?
Well, I don't know. I'm not great on using that kind of language. I think it's getting right with God is what it is.
And every time another one of those old belief systems is taken, I'm a little more free. You see, and what you find then is meditation becomes easier. And your life eases up. Like, my relationships now are so different. You know, I don't have this up and down business. You know, with a few people and a few things happen, of course. But not the way I used to be. You never knew, I'll tell you this, before I did this work, you never knew who was going to show up. It might be Mildred showing up, but you never knew, really. And, you know, eventually people get tired of it. And we wonder, why don't people like me? Why don't people want me around? Why don't I have loving relationships? Because I'm such a thorny individual. You never know who's around. You can't trust me. And now you can trust me. That's the difference. Most of the time. Most of the time. It's one of the most painful, in my experience, this business of the rock going in the pond is one of the most painful experiences that you can have. Well, in this case, it's not a diamond. It's just a nasty old something that triggers stuff that we need to get rid of. See, the point is, too, that if that stuff gets triggered and all that emotion comes up, people read your emotions. They don't know what the hell's going on. And so you will find big changes in yourself. If this makes any sense to you. Okay? There's something else just one thing I want to say about step eight, and then we'll be finished. I was taught to do a couple of things, because Bill is really insistent. I don't know how I ever sloughed off step eight at first. I didn't see the importance of it. I think it's absolutely crucial to the way I live today. One of the first things I have sponsees do these days is just go through their life and make a list. Maybe not of every person, but go through their life and make a list of people that they have encountered in their lifetime. You know, and maybe not everyone by name, but you know what I mean. To give you an idea of what my life looked like, it was really important for me to do this because I had this feeling that I have offended everybody. I'm dirty. I don't know how to clean it up and all this kind of stuff. When I made the list, I realized, you know, there were people whose name I didn't remember. And as I went down the list, I didn't remember some of the names of the nuns in the convent. I didn't remember some of the names of the priests, but there were priests that I met in the convent. And then when I left, there were men I met at the bars, and I couldn't have given you the name of one of them, even though I was engaged to three of them. Loving relationships. one-night stands, they also call them. And I got a better feel for what I was looking at. Then I have them then circle the ones that they feel they hurt. And then from that place, I have them make a list. No, they circle the ones that they feel they hurt. And then I have them write a little bit about each one that they feel they hurt. And what would it have felt like to be in the receiving end of me? It's a big deal, you know, because I had a very thorny relationship with my mother. And it never occurred to me. It was always, she wasn't the right kind of mother. I should have had a queen for a mother. I should have had an actress for a mother. She should have done this, and my mother was a good, decent woman. I just didn't like her. And there was something between us. But what I never considered was what it must have been like to be on the receiving end of having me as a daughter, because I was a cold-hearted little witch. Don't touch me. Stay away from me. I don't want anything to do with you. Can you imagine being on the receiving end of that? And so, as I wrote down that, I can tell you it helped me get out of self. I began to see that there were people on the planet who had feelings. I wasn't the only one who felt hurt sometimes and so on. And then from that list, we could pick out the people that we owed amends to and decide how we were going to go about that. And we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. I love that process. You talk step eight to me and you just wind me up, because that's one I've seen so much change in people's lives, I can't tell you. You know, step six, it wanders around a little more. But step eight, there's stuff you can do right there, and you get an immediate feedback. That kid I told you about, the guy with the two PhDs, very shortly after we did the work, he got a call from another continent saying, if you will come, we offer you $500,000 and a house and so on. And that's where his life has gone. But through the process, he was able to make peace with the manager whose guts he hated, because he thought that was the guy that was going to fire him. See, we are meant to live in oneness. We are meant to live in harmony. I do not have to like you. When the master was here, and I often say, if you like everybody, I think you're on something. You know, I just don't think that's possible. We never have been told we have to like everybody. Because I don't think it's realistic. But we have to love everybody. Not hormone love. Love that is a decision to see the presence of God showing up as you, and then I will treat you with the respect that you deserve because of that. That's the oneness and the harmony with which we're meant to live. God bless.